Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Let's start a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back with you on the afternoon drive. And we have a very busy Wednesday show coming up. A couple of topics that we're going to hit today. I talked about this on Monday. Saturday was kind of a downer. I know it's been bad that we haven't had sports for the last little while, but Saturday, man, it really, really hit home. No Kentucky Derby, no boxing, no NBA playoffs. I want to talk about the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. Every year we talk horse racing around this time of the year. Now the schedule is completely crazy. We don't get the Kentucky Derby until September, but there was an interesting race on Saturday, and I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. The virtual Kentucky Derby, where all 13 Triple Crown winners were on a track. There was a simulation, and it was a Secretariat coming from behind to catch Seattle Slew and Affirmed in the backstretch. Those kind of conversations are always fun. Every horse in that virtual race is legendary, because only 13 have ever been able to win the Triple Crown. Most recently, we saw it with American Pharoah in 2015. We saw it with Justified in 2017. So we've seen a couple of Triple Crowns as of late. It's still very difficult to accomplish. So we're going to break down that virtual race. We'll also take a look at the new schedule regarding the Triple Crown. Steve Bordstein, great friend of mine, is going to join us. He is an expert in the field of horse racing. That's how Steve and I actually got acquainted. It was talk about the Kentucky Derby. So we're going to bring Steve in. We'll talk about the Derby that wasn't this past Saturday. Also, we're going to talk Major League Baseball. We bring in Bill Lasky, great friend of mine, pitched for the San Francisco Giants in the 80s, and now he's an analyst for the Giants. I get excited when I get on social media. Twitter right now is a hotbed for Major League Baseball news. You know, we've talked about the realignment, putting 10 teams in three divisions. Could Major League Baseball open back up in June, early June, for a second spring training and then opening day on July 1st? Not so fast. That seems to be the rumor on Twitter, but there are reports that by the middle of May, Major League Baseball will have a proposal down to see if they can continue to move forward or if a condensed season is at all possible. So we got to talk to Bill about that. Also, you know, one of the storylines in Major League Baseball that really slipped under the radar? The punishment that Major League Baseball handed down to the Boston Red Sox for the cheating scandal that rocked the baseball world with the Houston Astros. Obviously, there was some underhanded, sneaky stuff happening with the Red Sox, but Major League Baseball was so discreet. They were so quiet about handing out this punishment, and the punishments were literally a slap on the wrist. The Red Sox have to forfeit a 2020 second-round pick. Their replay official is suspended. And then we've talked about Alex Cora. He can't return for at least a year. He wasn't the manager anymore anyways, right? So the way Major League Baseball handled the Boston Red Sox situation, it's very unique. And I'm not saying that this is what happened. I don't really know the ins and outs, and baseball was so quiet about it, and it took so long for us to get the results. I don't know much about the investigation other than what was reported about a month and a half ago. But let's be realistic here. If this was the Detroit Tigers, if this was the Kansas City Royals, if this was the Tampa Bay Rays, would it be a bigger deal? I think it's a fair question to ask based off of the results and how quiet Major League Baseball was with the punishment when they're really trying to crush and clamp down on the potential cheating through technology. We'll talk about that and more coming up on the show in just a bit. We'll take a look at some of the national sports headlines. Not a lot happening right now, although there is some news coming out of the NFL. Jadeveon Clowney, who remains the top name on the free agent market, is open to re-signing with the Seahawks, but according to ESPN, that seems extremely unlikely. Now, the Seahawks have not shut the door on Clowney returning, but it seems like as far as the money is concerned, these two are way too far apart. One of the teams that keeps peeking up as a potential fit for Jadeveon Clowney would be the Philadelphia Eagles. If that does in fact happen, I'm here for the storyline. Remember, it was Clowney that delivered a very questionable hit to knock Carson Wentz out last season. I'm here for the storyline if that's the case. I honestly don't know where Clowney goes at this point in time. Again, I think he's highly overrated. Really, I think Clowney is extremely overrated. And whoever signs him is going to get him at a one-year price, which I believe is going to be fine. I mean, he's not going to get the $17 million that he wants. But when you look at the production on the field and the injury history, it just doesn't mesh for the amount of money that this guy wants. We'll talk more NFL later on in the week, but right now, again, Jadeveon Clowney in a trip back to Seattle seems extremely unlikely. Quick look at what's happening in a very slow day in the national sports scene. Full show lined up. We're going to give you the local sports recap in just a moment, and then we're off and rolling on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports. Back right after this.
Since they want to know. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports live from the Auto Farm Studios, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I talked about this earlier in the week, this past Saturday, typically one of my favorite Saturdays of the year. We get the Kentucky Derby. We get a marquee boxing match. We have the NBA playoffs. It's a sports lover's dream. Unfortunately, we didn't get even close to that this past Saturday, but we did get a virtual race pitting all 13 Triple Crown winners against one another, and the winner turned out to be Secretariat. Shouldn't be a big surprise there. We're going to talk about that and the racing schedule because we are missing the Triple Crown right now with our next guest, Steve Bordstein, great friend of the show. Definitely a horse racing expert, to say the least. And Steve, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time.
I appreciate the time as well. Thanks for having me on.
So what were your thoughts about the virtual Kentucky Derby over the weekend, pitting all 13 Triple Crown winners against one another? My take on it before we get yours, and I said this earlier in the week, if I have to watch a virtual sporting event, sign me up for the Triple Crown, because the Triple Crown race, the legacy race, whatever it is you want to call it, because it's 2.5 minutes, 2 minutes, and it's compelling enough, like it'll keep my attention span for a short period of time, and it gives us something to talk about. I couldn't do this with any other sport other than horse racing. I'm curious to your thoughts on it.
Well, I think there's options when you can, if you could do it with other sports. I mean, I think the first thing that came to mind was that isn't it great we have the technology to do kind of these similar, you know, these kind of themed sporting events, because this goes to the argument about all sports. Well, who was the best basketball player? And you have the 20-somethings who have never heard of Larry Bird or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And then you've got the 60-somethings who think that LeBron James was a flash in the pan. And, oh, you never saw Bill Russell play, right? So if you have the technology available to do this, this was a good dry run, right? Okay, so when you threw in these 13 Triple Crown winners. Now, it's difficult to simulate what the Derby is because it's so unlike any other sporting event in horse racing. It's unlike any other race. The horses that run the Kentucky Derby have never run against that big a field size. Typically, they've never run a Churchill Downs. They've never run in front of 100,000 people. Okay, so by that just general token alone, the Derby is unlike any other race. So pitting the 13 Triple Crown winners, which goes all the way back to 1919 and Sir Barton. Now, you got to remember, in 1919, the Kentucky Derby did not have the kind of flair and fashion and name recognition that it does in 2020. In 1919, there was no such thing really as the Triple Crown. They only designated him that because he won these three races, which, by the way, they were out of order in 1919. The Belmont was run before the Preakness in 1919. That being said, It was fun to see it as it was presented. It was a well done production as far as like building up pre race hype for it. The result was not a surprise in any way, shape, or form. There's no argument that of the 13 Triple Crown winners, the horse that won the best Derby among those 13 Triple Crown winners was Secretariat. He ran the fastest Kentucky Derby. It was the most dominant performance, and clearly he's recognized by most racing experts of any generation as probably the greatest horse of the 20th century. An argument could have been made for only two others, and ironically, they ran second and third in the virtual running of the Derby. Second was Citation, third was Seattle Slow. New racing fans could have argued that American Pharoah, Justify were great horses. They weren't. American Pharoah and Justify couldn't run on the same racetrack of any day, at any time, with Secretariat or Affirmed or Seattle Slew or Citation. That's just not possible. I do think that some of the other horses that won the Triple Crown back in the 30s and 40s, again, there's not enough evidence to know how they would have performed in front of 100,000 people, which is now what the Derby gets and has gotten basically since the days of Secretariat.
Again, Steve Bortstein, our guest right now, as we talk about virtual horse racing, the Kentucky Derby, and what now is the new norm for the Triple Crown, at least for 2020. Yeah, definitely there's really no way you could argue Secretariat winning the virtual Derby. I'm glad you brought up American Pharoah and Justify. And Steve, you can tell me if I'm completely wrong here, because I absolutely trust your knowledge and your judgment. I don't think American Pharoah would outrun Justify, and he did at the Kentucky Derby, virtual Kentucky Derby, finishing fifth compared to Justify at eight. In my mind, Justify was a better horse than American Pharoah.
In my mind, Justify was the better horse, but, and this is where, if you'd have run the virtual race under another circumstance, remember when Justify won his Derby, it was on a sloppy track. It had been a monsoon. Like 10 minutes before Justify's Derby went off, a monsoon hit Louisville, Kentucky. So the track was completely off. When American Pharoah won the Derby, it was on a fast track. So that's why American Pharoah's Derby is going to compare more favorably than Justify's Derby, because it was on a fast track and the conditions of the virtual Derby were also on a dry track. If you could have run, I would have been interested to see if you would have run three different derbies, one on a fast track with 80-degree temperatures, one on a sloppy track that would have rained all day, and one where it had rained 10 minutes before post time. Because I think there would have been some differences, maybe not with the winner. And again, we don't know. I mean, maybe Secretariat would have run like garbage on a sloppy racetrack. We'll never know, because he didn't. And that was the condition of the virtual race. It was a dry, fast track. But it would have been interesting to see if you'd have taken maybe a different scenario, like put a rainstorm in, see who would have run better. Do a dry track, see who would have run better. Do a hot, humid day, see who would have run better. But you can only run one Derby. So that's why I think if it was run under normal conditions, fair, fast track, that's where Secretariat's going to come in. I agree with you in the assessment that Justify, I think, was a better racehorse than American Pharoah. But American Pharoah also has the distinction, and this may have had nothing to do with how they ran the virtual Derby. American Pharoah has the distinction of not only winning the three Triple Crown races, but then ending his year by winning the Breeders' Cup Classic, which made him the only horse ever to win the Grand Slam, which he's the only horse ever to do it. Don't forget, there was no Breeders' Cup before the 1980s, and Justify did not run after he won the Belmont Stakes. His career came to an end. So to that, and I think that's where American Pharoah probably rated better, but I would have been interested to see how Justify would have fared on a sloppy virtual racetrack.
Yeah, we can't forget that American Pharoah was the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years, regardless of the field of competition. That accounts for a lot, at least in the minds of the spectators, and definitely in the minds of the media as well, right? I mean, that's something that you can't get through. We had plenty of horses capable of doing it, but he was the first to do it in 37 years.
Well, I think that speaks volumes to how they ran 1-2. Don't forget, when Secretariat won the Triple Crown in 1973, he had broken a 25-year streak after Citation. So ironically, they ran 1-2. The horse that broke the 25-year streak and the horse that was the last one before Secretariat to win the Triple Crown. So it was ironic that they ran 1-2. You had Seattle Slew, who came along a few years later to run third. He ran third in the virtual race. Then, of course, you had affirmed, who ran fourth. He was the one that was a year after Seattle Slow, and then you had fifth with American Pharoah, who broke the longest streak of 37 years.
Steve, I'm going to throw this question out there to you, and it's completely off the cuff. It may be a ridiculous, stupid question. It almost seems like it's something you would see on a horse racing thread, a fan site, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I had to take a trip down, you know, memory lane well before I was even born and watch Secretariat win the Triple Crown, the live races. I had to turn around and watch those. If you throw Sham into this 13-horse field of horses that won the Triple Crown, where does Sham rank in your mind? Because this horse was fully capable of winning the Triple Crown. It was just bad for him, bad timing that he was a three-year-old the same year as Secretariat.
It's an interesting question, and I can even take it one step further as well. Sham would have run well. I don't think he ever would have beaten Secretariat. The better argument would be this one. The three races that Affirmed won in 1978. Don't forget, he beats Alidar in all three races.
Yep.
All three races, very close margins. Would Alidar have been a better horse? Would Alidar have competed? And I think Alidar would have run just as well had there not been Affirmed in his way in those three races. The Sham argument gets lost a little bit in the sense that I don't think the two horses were even remotely close. Sham put together a series of really good races, but no, I don't think so. Another interesting question would have been Reaver Ridge, who won the Derby in 72, same connections, right? Same trainer. Reaver Ridge would have been an interesting argument. Another question would have been, what if you took horses that ran, that won two legs of the Triple Crown? Like, you can take, there's been a lot of really good ones that won two legs of the Triple Crown, Point Given. There's Silver Charm, who won the first two races, Winning Colors, who won the Derby and Preakness. There's been a lot of horses that won the first two legs. And it brings up a lot of other interesting, you know, like you said, a lot of interesting discussion threads, virtual race type, stuff like that. But I don't know if Sham would have been in the same classification. I think Alidar would have been in the same classification that was Affirmed.
Well, Steve, again, let's talk about what the schedule, the future of the Triple Crown is. Again, Steve Bordstein, our guest right now as we talk horse racing. Again, we should have had the Kentucky Derby this past weekend. We didn't. You and I had a conversation about this just through text message. I mean, looking ahead, we're going to get the Kentucky Derby right now in September, which changes things up completely. It's something like we've never seen before.
Yeah, the Kentucky Derby will now be run on the first Saturday in September. The Churchill Downs meet, which normally starts the weekend before the running of the Kentucky Derby, is now going to start, I believe, in mid-May. I believe they're going to start on the 16th of May. It will not obviously conclude the Kentucky Derby. It will include other races. Then they're going to shut down for a little while for Turfway Park, which will open in July. And then the typical fall racing season, which normally starts in late September, they're going to start that a little bit earlier at Churchill Downs to make way for the running of the Kentucky Derby. Now, right now, ironically, since we've been talking about Bob Baffert's two Triple Crown winners of recently here, obviously American Pharoah and Justify, he's probably got the favorites right now for the Kentucky Derby. There's a horse that's been running out in California prior to his win last weekend in Arkansas by the horse by the name of Nadal. He's named after the tennis player. He's been very impressive in his most recent races. Charlatan, who won another division of the Arkansas Derby last week, and also trained by Bob Baffert, happens to be one of the other major contenders right now. So that will be run in September. But the Triple Crown, as we know it, the Derby, the Preakness, followed by the Belmont, is all going to be different now. The Belmont will be run, I believe, now they're saying that's going to be run first, followed by the Preakness, then followed by the Derby. So everything is kind of screwed up right now as far as the schedule is concerned, but that's been the norm pretty much for all sports right now. As a matter of fact, they're going to run the Midsummer Classic, which is the Traverse Stakes. They run that at Saratoga every August. That's going to be run before the Kentucky Derby. So the entire 2020 racing calendar, which is still only right now consisting of just a few racetracks around the country with races being run with no fans around at all. Right now, that's where the Churchill Downs meet's going to go. They're going to run this upcoming meet starting in 2 weeks. They're going to run that racing season with right now very few, if any, fans at all in the stands.
Now, this is going to be a tough question, but I'll throw it out there. Bigger miss right now for Steve Bordstein. The Triple Crown, the Kentucky Derby, or April Major League Baseball. What's the bigger miss for you?
Only because of the fact that the expectations for our beloved Los Angeles Dodgers were so high right now going into this season, that's been the bigger miss. I mean, honestly, like, I go home at night, or I'm home at night, and I'm bored out of my mind. I have honestly been, like, playing simulated 2020 MLB games just to see where we'd be right now in the standings. And, by the way, we'd be doing really well right now if under the current simulation that we've been doing. Like, we're in first place. We're, like, 9 games up on San Diego, blah, blah, blah. We should be winning the World Series this year. So it's really, really irritating me right now. So, yeah, that's the bigger miss. And I think the reason it's a bigger miss is, A, again, expectations, Dodger baseball, what have you. The other reason is because I think the horse racing business still is out there. There's still races being run. They're being run with no fans. There's only a few tracks around. But if I want to get my racing fix in, I can go to XYZ, television network. I can go to my favorite account deposit wagering website. I could still put a couple of dollars on a horse race. I'm not missing out on horse racing. I'm missing out on Major League Baseball.
Yeah, we're missing out on Major League Baseball. We're missing out on marquee boxing events, which we should have had this past Saturday. And, of course, we're missing out on the NBA playoffs on top of everything else. A weird time, to say the least. Steve Bortstein, again, our guest today. Steve, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I love the horse racing talk. I look forward to this time of the year every year so we can have these discussions. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more Steve Bortstein.
Yeah, right now we're just getting ready to do some new things on radio down the road. I'll have more information about that fairly soon. I do post occasional podcasts right now as we're getting ready to jump back into things. Obviously, everything's a little bit thrown off kilter right now, but you can follow me and my work and for future announcements. You can do that by following me on Twitter at formerly Fox1340.
Yeah, Steve, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate the time, and I will have more conversations relatively soon.
I look forward to it, my friend. Thank you.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to talk Major League Baseball right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball. Deep to left field. Way, way back. It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Time to talk some baseball. We're going to bring in Bill Lasky, great friend of mine, great friend of the show. Joins us frequently to talk about the major leagues. I know there is a lot of excitement about the possibility of a season getting underway within the next couple of months. We'll talk to Bill about that and some of the other topics floating around the major league ranks. Bill, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time again today.
Yeah, it's great talking to you once again, and I hope all your listeners, as well as your staff and the people working, are safe and just more or less working on trying to get the world back to where it was and safe times ahead. And let's hope that continues and baseball will be back in a couple months.
I hope. I definitely hope. And same to you. Hopefully everyone is staying safe. Bill, I know it is a crazy time, and I know that anytime we get a glimmer of hope, right? I mean, it could be someone sitting in their basement tweeting out, "Hey, I heard," and all of a sudden we get excited because we missed the game this much. You and I had a conversation off of the cuff, and the first thing I asked you was, "Hey, Bill, how realistic is it to get this season off and rolling on July 1st?
Yeah, and it really isn't. Just reading different reports today, Joe Girardi from the Phillies, a couple other managers said that writers more or less tweeted that out in possibly a June 10th start of spring training 2, as they call it, and realistically trying to start July 1st. And both these managers said, we are constantly talking about it, but that is not realistic numbers. Those aren't the dates, that those aren't realistic. So please, fans, we all know that everybody wants to see baseball. We watch Korea baseball now. ESPN, of course, is brilliantly putting those on our screen to watch some baseball. And I think Major League Baseball is watching the different countries trying to start baseball back up with no fans and trying to see the safety aspects of it. And I don't believe Major League Baseball is about to jump into this so quickly. I think with different states opening up, they're starting to see the realistic numbers. And I think that's what's going to draw them to the next step. 100%. Baseball is going to be back. How many games, when, that's all down the road.
Yeah, and again, I can relate this to the NBA as well. I think when you have Rob Manfred, and we can relate this to Adam Silver as well, these are commissioners that have not been afraid to push the envelope, make some changes, try to update the game, modernize it a little bit. And we know that there has been proposals behind closed doors that we have no idea about, right? Because these commissioners, these two commissioners in particular, have really been open to some changes to the game. And Bill, this is a perfect opportunity. If we have a 100-game shortened season, it's a perfect opportunity for either one of these two commissioners. I mean, again, Adam Silver, if we're talking about the NBA just coming back for a playoff, this is an opportunity for these commissioners to try to make some subtle changes to modernize the game. And I think it's a great possibility that we see something like that.
Oh, I totally agree with you, too. When you talk to Adam Silver about basketball, Steve Kerr here in the West Coast is pretty much saying that he just doesn't see teams coming back that aren't in the hunt. He just thinks that's just going to be unrealistic and go right into the playoffs or go a couple weeks of just playing some games to get them in basketball shape and then start the playoffs. But you see these commissioners really looking at every aspect of the safety and is it really going to be worth it? Same thing with the NHL, hockey starting to talk to. But when you look at baseball and some of the subtle changes, the DH for both sides, no replay, possibly, of course, no fans in the stands, maybe the human element taken away from the home plate umpire. These are all good times to try it. Why not? It may be a shorter season. It may be something that will help baseball and attract fans to watch it. But I'm right there with you. I hope he does do it in the shorter season when it starts. And let's try, see if these things work. But I'm still a National League guy, and I still like the pitcher hitting in a ninth spot.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. When you look at the way the season could go, if we have some of these changes, I don't believe we get a 162-game season. I just don't think that's possible, so I think we get a condensed season in some form or another. I don't know if that means we extend the playoff field. I don't know what it looks like, but in your mind, Bill, do you put an asterisk next to whatever happens this season in 2020 if we get one?
I believe so. I don't think you're going to see the National League and American League teams divide the division this year. You might have just the divisions of where teams are playing. They had three different leagues set up and different locations in America and West Coast, Midwest, and East Coast. I like that format with American and National Leagues playing against each other and that. But I just don't see that happening once there's a vaccine and the world gets back to normal, hopefully by 2021. And spring training starts the same and the division start and baseball starts like a normal schedule. But this year, I don't care how they do it. I think this is the year to try these things. I just want to see baseball come back. I want to see the ball hit the bat. I want to see excitement. I want to see the players just like everybody. And I just want to see the sport continue and start up again.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now, former big league pitcher. Speaking of baseball, we do get the Korean Baseball League on TV, at least with ESPN. Bill, I was curious right out of the gate. When I heard that this was going to be a thing, the first thing I did was jump on and start looking at rosters, and I started looking at coaches. A lot of former big leaguers now serving as coaches in the Korean Baseball League. Have you watched any of this up to this point?
I did, and my good friend Matt Williams is a manager over there. He left the Oakland A's last year. He was there with Bob Melvin as a third base coach. He was an analyst with the Giants with me on NBC Bay Area here for a couple years, but he wanted to get back in the game, and he wants to manage. He, like he tells me and a lot of other people, he had bad taste in his mouth after he left the Washington Nationals as a manager and some of the problems he couldn't overcome, but he still wanted to manage, and somebody came to him and offered him to manage in Korea. And he said, why not? Let me try it. Now, did he think all this was going to go down? No. But I saw pictures of him, and, you know, he's got a mask on in the dugout with gloves on. So he is doing everything he's supposed to do. You see the third and first base coach with mask on, but the players don't. So we're going to see how this thing picks up, see how much they go into more safety mode with it if anything else happens. And of course, Japan's supposed to start up. Taiwan's supposed to start up. Of course, we heard Manny Ramirez wanting to come back to play baseball in Taiwan again. So all these other countries that are in front of us that have faced the plague before and the pandemic, and now they're starting to come back to life. I think United States is pushing a little bit more, and I just hope that they do it in a safety aspect where no players get hurt.
You mentioned Manny Ramirez wanting to make a comeback, and maybe I'm a sucker for nostalgia. Maybe I'm a sucker for watching the players that I grew up watching. But Manny Ramirez could play in a semi-pro league in the middle of Timbuktu. Sign me up. I'm going to watch.
He sure could. I mean, he's always in shape. Another guy that I saw, Julio Franco, was a hitting coach in Korea. I played with Julio a couple of years, and what a great guy. That's another guy that played, I think, almost till 50 years old. I mean, he was in awesome shape. But you're right. I did the same thing about looking at rosters and looking at coaches and see who's over there. And Brett Pill, who also played with the Giants, is a big Korea baseball player. So it's interesting to see how many players and coaches and managers are trying different things. Going to Japan was the big thing. Now Korea baseball is igniting in the baseball world. So it's fun to watch active baseball, isn't it? And that's about what I really, live baseball, and it's back. So as much baseball that we need, if it's Korea baseball and ESPN, I'm all for it.
Yeah, when you mentioned Matt Williams, he's the manager, I believe it was the Tigers. His hitting coach was Hee-Sop Choi. And I'm sure the listeners will remember Hee-Sop Choi. So when you go down and you take a look at just the level of coaches, be it a hitting coach, pitching coach, whatever it may be, you're going to see some names that will spark up some nostalgia. So I definitely challenge the listeners to get out and take a look at the Korean Baseball League. Maybe you'll see a name that will spark your interest, and that definitely helps with the entertainment value of watching the Korean Baseball League. Bill, I got to get your thoughts on this because you're a former pitcher. Today is a fairly historical day when we go back and we look at the pitching ranks. We go all the way back to 1998. This is crazy. This was 22 years ago. Kerry Wood had one of the most dominant performances ever. He had 20 strikeouts against the Houston Astros. Can you believe that was 22 years ago today?
No, it doesn't, man. I watched that game. You know, that curveball he had and the power fastball he had throwing at Wrigley Field, that place was live. It was awesome. I mean, Kerry Wood was dominant that day. But I do want to throw another one on this date. Willie Mays, 89-year-old birthday today. Willie Mays turned 89 today. Happy birthday to the great Say Hey Kid.
Yeah, a lot of history on this day in the game of baseball, to say the least. Bill Lasky, again, joining us right now. Bill, one of the storylines that kind of fell by the wayside, and maybe it's because of everything else that is happening, Major League Baseball did release the punishments for the Boston Red Sox, and I'm curious as to your take on this. I got to be honest with you, I was extremely underwhelmed by not only the announcement, but again, the punishments that was handed down to the Boston Red Sox based on the long wait that we had.
Well, one of the things you and I do is we agree on a lot of things. I thought that was a hand slap. I really thought as much as they held on to that, they held on, and then they kind of slipped it into the news. And from what the Astros had and what the Red Sox had, I thought it was a slap on the wrist, and it was very, very minimal. Then I started listening to some of the other things. All these people that are suspended for the year are all getting the year suspension going on this year without baseball. And I thought that was something that I didn't really agree on either. So, you know, A.J. Hinch, who's out of baseball, is living off his suspension with no baseball, and he's going to be right back in the manager's job next year. So there are some things that Manfred has done, and one of the things I think you and I both agree, the Red Sox, that was really, really minimal.
Yeah, they lost a 2020 second-round pick. Alex Cora is banned through the 2020 playoffs. Big deal. What difference does that make? And then they banned their replay operator, JT Watkins. So when you take a look at these penalties, and again, for a league that is really, really trying to discourage cheating in the form of technology, for a level of penalty to be this slight, and I guess, again, it's a sign of the times, but there was really a lack of media outrage regarding this as well. And in my mind, Bill, and I don't know if you can add to this, I'm still kind of in the dark as to what these punishments, what do they stem from, right? They're so light. So my question is, if you use technology during that 2018 run, what exactly did you do? Because these penalties pretty much say they didn't do anything. Like that's the way I look at it.
And what did it do for the game? It really put a black mark on the game. And you start hearing fans talking about how much cheating really is going on. And And now you catch them. You catch them with all the different video. You catch Altuve, don't rip my jersey off, you know, because I got a thing on my chest that's going to buzz me. There's so many different things that happen, and you got a World Series champion out of it. No asterisk by that. And now you have the Red Sox, who really, Joey Cora was the guy that really pushed this when he was with the Astros, brought it over to Boston, and sure enough, a hand slap for all that. I disagree with some of the thoughts on this, as you do. And what's going to happen down the road? Is it going to come back? Are they going to do something with replay? Are they going to do something with computers in the dugout? I still go back to that. Once they allowed laptops and pads and computers in the dugout, everything changed. Everything went into how much I can get in that short span to bring to my hitters or bring to my pitchers, instead of having all that data ready by game time, and it's game on when it comes to baseball. And all that technology should be pushed to the side.
Yeah, I hate to ask the question, but I'm thinking it. I'm sure you have thought of this. I know the listeners are thinking of it. If this wasn't the Boston Red Sox, and this was the Tampa Bay Rays, or this was the Kansas City Royals, a team in a lesser market with less prestige, would the punishment be a little bit more harsh? Would we have a better understanding of what actually happened?
I'm right there with you. It's that East Coast mentality. It's the New York state of mind. You know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cubs, all the big-name franchises, your storybook franchises, your winners of World Series, and how many attendance records they all broke. I mean, that's what it really comes down to. And it's all East Coast bias. I've been out here West Coast pretty much all my life, and you see it just from player to player. On our radio show this past weekend, we talked about Derek Jeter compared to different shortstops in different ranks. And Derek Jeter, don't get me wrong, is a Hall of Famer, but you look at some other shortstops from lesser-known teams in lesser-known markets that you could put numbers right up with them, and they never got those big numbers like Derek Jeter did in the press or, the accolades that he gets now. And like I said, don't get me wrong, Derek Jeter is one of the best shortstops, but there are a lot better shortstops that have done more that have never got that pat on the back.
No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. Bill Lasky, again, our guest right now. Bill, I know it is a little bit of a downtime for you, but still, you stay busy, you stay active. Let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, every Saturday doing our radio show on KNBR, the sports leader out here on 68. You can go on KNBR and pick it up offline, online, and just listen in. We do a lot of baseball talk. Ron Wotus, who you had on your show, is one of our guests. Marty Lurie and I co-host it. And it's really a couple hours of just live baseball talk. What's going on in the game? We talk about different comparisons of players, and it's just good, hard baseball talk, and I love talking baseball, as you and I do. But if listeners want to listen in, jump in. KNBR sports leader out here in San Francisco.
Bill, it's always a pleasure to get you on. Thank you again for the time, and I'm sure we'll talk again real soon.
Always. You guys be safe and be healthy. Take care.
Great baseball conversation with Bill Lasky here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to break for just a moment. We do have more coming up when we return. Again, live from the Auto Forum Studios right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Boscarini.
Life in the fast lane, moving at the speed of life, and I can't slow down. Only got a gallon in the gas tank, but I'm almost at the finish line, so I can't stop now.
We're going to close out this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports. I want to thank Bill Lasky and Steve Bordstein for joining us, as always. I think tomorrow is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to tomorrow's show. You know, coming up on Saturday, we have live sports returning, UFC 249, and it really is a stacked card front to back. Five fights on the main card of the pay-per-view, four on the free prelim on ESPN, including Donald Cerrone and Anthony Pettis. Greg Hardy is also on the main card. I think it's going to be very entertaining, plus we get live sports back. And then also on the show tomorrow, we're going to take a trip down memory lane. We're going to have a conversation about starting lineups. Remember those toys as a kid? I loved Kenner's starting lineups. It was basically a G.I. Joe, except your favorite sports athletes. Basketball, football, baseball, hockey, they had them all. They came out in the late 80s. They had about a 10-year run, and then they just vanished. And at one time, starting lineups, they were collector's items. And if you were like me as a kid, you had a collection of them. I still have tons of starting lineups in the box. I never opened them. A lot of them aren't worth squat. They were invented by a guy named Pat McAnally, who was the only player documented to score a perfect test on the Wonderlic for NFL rookies. He was a punter at Harvard. He spent some time with the Cincinnati Bengals. I think it's a fascinating story. I want to go through and talk about the creation of starting lineups, how they came about, and the holy grail of starting lineups. There's four. Today, in a market where they're worth like $2 to $3 a piece, there are four starting lineups that if a collector comes across, they view them the holy grail. If there's any that exist in a box, they're worth a lot of money. And they all four happen to be Utah Jazz players. Karl Malone, John Stockton, Mark Eaton, and Thurl Bailey. Those are the holy grail of the starting lineup collection. We're going to talk about that as well on the show tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. Out of time today. We will catch you tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.